This morning, I titled my sermon this morning, it's called Biblical World, because I'm not a pastor, so I will look at the Bible from a different perspective. I have, well, that gives me freedom because I'm not a pastor, so I will look at the Bible in a secular way, in a historical way, blend it together, and see what we come up with towards the end. 15 minutes or so, because I think we have a... Anyway, that's the one. So, this is our Bible, right? Nothing too dramatic there. I haven't wowed you yet. You can look at the Bible for its historical context, for its spiritual context, because it nourishes our soul, because we're Christians. You can look at it from a political angle, and there's something there. In fact, the one that I have right now is called the Jefferson Bible. It's written by Thomas Jefferson. He was president. He built Monticello. He signed the charter, that yada, yada, yada. So, because he is a spiritual man, but at the same time, he was kind of a philosopher. So he looked at all the... Bibles out there, teachings out there. He studied Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, and then to learn about their philosophy. And then he said, I don't want that. He went back to the Bible. He called it the morals and teachings of Jesus. And then this one is a replica of his, it's a personal note. And from 1902 to 1948, it's actually, if you become a senator or a congressman in the States, this is actually a standard issue. They printed about 9,000 of these. And this is like, now we call it, you know the term WWJD? What would Jesus do? This is it. The morals and teaching of Jesus. What he did is, because he knows 11 languages and he can speak 8, he got Latin, German, English and French, just the gospel, and that is because he studied all the philosophy. He always comes back to the Bible, and it's amazing that it was a standard issue in the United States until 1948. So, and there are a lot of principles that we find in the Bible that not even the Christian world doesn't know about, and they're doing it. For example, the word TGIF. Young people knows that. Thank goodness it's Friday. What is the principle there? I told you I'm gonna attack the Bible from a secular perspective. What does that mean? TGIF. Why? What did they come up with that? Because Saturday you can just chillax, right? Or you can do barbecue, whatever. But you know that Sunday, if you don't go to church on Sunday, you could be watching football or the Pan Am games in Toronto right now. But the idea is you're finished working. So what's the principle in the Bible? We're just gonna go through Genesis. The idea there, the principle there is, isn't it God create for 6 days? And then on the seventh day he rested. Is there something in us, is there something in our DNA that's written way, way back that we should follow the example? And then another one is, we're still in the book of Genesis, but then we've got the creation, and then we go on our vacation, just like our two pastors right now. We always look for things like, so we go something exotic, or we go camping, we go something naturey, or explore a canyon, explore a cave, or something. So we look for something different. Why is that? You begin to ask, what is the biblical principle that we can find there? Well, isn't it that once upon a time, if we came from Adam and Eve, that they were living in a garden called Eden. And then there is that something in us. There is that longing that we always look for something. Oh, just to relax, just to refresh. Is there something in our DNA that was been there telling us that once upon a time we belong to paradise? And then, well, we screw that things up, isn't it? Big time. There's only one commandment that God said, don't eat of the fruit. It's not like there's no other fruit in the garden, but we managed to screw that things up. Oh, sorry, there's a pastor here. Pressure on. And then, a hardened criminals, I'm just getting started, a hardened criminal who said, I killed that person. Sure. Why do we even bother to assign a lawyer, assign a court time for that? Well, all the witnesses, he killed that person. He said, I killed him. Why do we even give them lawyers? Why? It's called due process. Because once upon a time, when we got kicked out of the garden, they have two kids, right? Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel. One murdered the other. And then God, of course God knows, free will. We're not robots. That's why we can choose to accept him or reject him. So he's watching. And then he said, this is my version. Hey, where's your brother? Well, God knows already that he's dead. And he said, well, gee, am I now my brother's keeper? So the society doesn't know that it's even patterned in the Bible. It's due process, right? It just goes on and on. That's just the first book of Genesis. And then, well, towards the end, you go to the book of, you go to Joseph, the story. It's just amazing. Every time I read, that's my favorite story in the Bible, actually. Because every time you look at it, it's just all the principles, everything is there. It just comes off the face, literally. Well, in my own term, anyway. Well, he was economic primarily. Remember the seven-year cycle? 7 years of plenty, 7 years of drought. And from the story is like quite amazing. From a favorite son to the most hated brother, sold into slavery, went to Egypt, was in prison for a while, and then by about 30 plus years old, maybe 33 years old, stand before the Pharaoh, and all of a sudden he interpreted the dream, and then boom, all of a sudden he became the prime minister of Egypt. And this is a big deal, because towards the end of it all, he brought 70 of his family to Egypt. Egypt in the days is very xenophobic. Could you imagine bringing in 70? And from immigration perspective, here's my take on it. They were shepherds. If they said that their occupation is farmer, no, they will deny entry because they're taking job from the Egyptians. So they said, we're shepherds. What is a shepherd? Oh, cool, it's not farming. Okay, come in, right? So even though he's the prime minister, he worked with the system that they have there, because that is the system. And then, well, because it's xenophobic, they don't really want to mix up with the Israelites. So they were given a land all the way there so that they don't mix up with the population. So even he is the prime minister, he still think about, yeah, he works with the system. And just a lot of economic principles that we can find there. Seven years of plenty, that means save something like that. And then when it's drought time, well, then at least you save something for rainy days, and just in case it doesn't rain, I guess. The case of Joseph. So that's a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of principles there. And then what else? Exodus. Remember the 10 plagues of Egypt? From a secular perspective, we have to look on the other side of the world to see what's happening at the day. Because if you're just concentrated on what's happening in Egypt, it's like a specialty. You study more and more and learning less and less, right? So you have to look at the other side of the world. And then at this time, during the time of the Exodus, some scholars said 1650 BC or something like that. And what's happening in the other side of the world is the Minoan culture in the Mediterranean area is also they're also in the height of their power at this time. They are famous because they were traders. They managed to discover that if you combine tin and copper, you produce bronze, hence the Bronze Age. They were so successful at that. They trade tin from a tiny island called, now the tiny island is now called Great Britain because they have so much of that. And then they trade copper from an island called Cyprus. And then because they're so strategic, Crete and Santorini, that's where they are. So if they became good traders. That is what's happening in the other side of the world at that time. And then a volcano erupted close to Santorini. It's called Mount Terra. And a lot of scholars said that this could have attributed to what happened during the time of Exodus. Massive eruption, spewing a lot of volcanic ash up in the air. Grasshoppers trying to flee, southeasterly wind, and that will get you to Egypt because of the volcanic ash. Rivers are polluted, frogs keeps multiplying, and then there's even a darkness. Isn't that two weeks ago we have that when we have all this forest fire, and then all of a sudden you can't see this, you can see a red ball of fire. A lot of scholars are attributing that, but just because it was a natural event does not mean that it was not set by a divine plan. That's some people stop. They stop, okay, that's a natural plan. Okay, move on. But from what I'm going to show you this morning, so that's the premise, by the way. That's why I call it the biblical world. That even though it's natural, something set up the timing of events to fulfill that thing, that what's happening. So now we know that there's a world out there. I choose to do this because in my other life I also do trade. So what's happening in China could affect Canada. What's happening in Saudi Arabia could affect Canada. So we are all interconnected in a way. So we can't just live in isolation. So that's how I perceive things. So sometimes when they ask me to do some things at work, and they want instant decision like that, I can't do that. That's one of my downfall. I have to sleep on it. I have to look at it from different angle, because that's my downfall. I have to sleep on that one. I can't just say, okay, let's do it. Before we get to our text this morning. We'll go back 70 AD because that's what I like when I'm taking up my degree. I like history because I want to know what's happening in the world. But then I realize you don't make a lot of money on that, so forget that. Psychology because it helps you think, and then philosophy because it stimulates you to reason, right? So we'll go back 70 AD. That time, in 68 AD, Nero died. I'm getting to our sermon now. That's just my introduction, by the way. So Nero, in the next 10 minutes, I promise, I'm going to finish in 10 minutes. In 68 AD, Nero died. He is the last of the Claudio-Julian bloodline. I mean, two powerful families mixed together. And then they produced their own emperor. So that was in 68 AD. And then, by June of 68, a general said, I'm taking the throne. His name is Galba, general. He is actually like a governor at the time. And I guess he didn't pay his soldiers, so they killed him. That was January 69 AD. And then two generals said, "Well, I want to be the emperor." One is General Otto. He was 37 years old when he proclaimed himself to be the emperor. But then 4 months later, the history said he committed a suicide. And then another general came, General Vitellius. I told you I like history. Said, I'm taking the throne as well. But because the death of General Otto looks suspicious, and he's the only man standing, so he cannot really get the support of the Senate. Like, he got half of the soldiers support him, half of the Senate support him, and the other one doubt because they think something happened there. Why was this 37-year-old general all of a sudden committed suicide? Something happened. But again, maybe he didn't pay his centurions. They killed him too. And then a fourth general came, General Vespasian. He was emperor for 10 years, 69 AD to 79 AD. This is what's happening in Rome. And now, because in the meantime, in Judea, they are mounting a revolt because they smell blood in Rome. There's a political turmoil in Rome. There's no leadership in Rome. So they stage a rebellion from 66 AD to 70 AD. Once they even got control of Jerusalem. That's the coin that they produced. By the way, I use coin because we can date them. Like, you know exactly when those coins were produced, so you can be exact about the date. And then towards the back of the coin, this is what they accomplished sometimes. Like they say, like in the during the time of Marcus Aurelius, they his space in the front of the coin, and then on the back, there's the Colosseum. So I built this. And because they used this in the Roman Empire, the coin, they used all this. So it's like saying, hey, I did this. And everybody knows because you use money every day. So that's why I use coin, because I can exactly date them when they were produced. And yeah, there's no commentary or anything that could be biased sometimes. So this is it. This is the pure. I just like to know the date and what their accomplishment. That's why I use coins. So this is what they produced the second year of revolt. This is 68 AD. Because now there's no leadership in Rome. So yeah. They said, well, we have to separate. It's either now or never. And then, when General Vespasian came to the throne, become the emperor of Rome, he had to do something about this rebellion. Because if he doesn't do anything, he would appear weak. They'll remove him. So they have to make an example. So he ordered his son Titus to just go to Jerusalem. The history just said they took no prisoners. So, I mean, read between the lines. They went to Jerusalem, and can I have a slide of the temple? That is the Jewish pride. It's the temple. Can I have the other slide too? That's a replica of the temple. So they went there. They demolished the whole thing. I know it's excessive, but it's like saying to the whole world, to the whole empire, hey, this is what's going to happen to you. If you dare challenge me, this is what's going to happen to you. They demolished the temple, right? 70 AD. Now, let's read our text this morning. Mark 13, verse 1 says, as Jesus was leaving the temple that day, one of his disciples said, teacher, look at this magnificent buildings. Look at the impressive stone in the walls. And verse 2, Jesus replied, yes, look at these great buildings. But they will be completely demolished. Not one stone will be left on top of another. Boom. Fulfilled. Right? That was 70 AD. I give you the I give you the secular background of what's happening there. Again, just because war, it seems natural, it doesn't mean that there's no divine plan. It looks like Jesus foresaw this. I guess because he's God. He can go forwards and backwards in time. So everybody knows that this prophecy was fulfilled in 70 AD. That's why there's no temple there now. Now, I think it's the Doom of the Rock that was standing there now, right where the temple is. The location is debatable, but I think that's what's in there now. It's a Muslim temple now, mosque, that's in there, because the temple is no longer there. That happened. How did Jesus know about that? I guess because he's God. So that means that when Jesus said that you're a sinner, I guess you're a sinner. There's no gray area there. And when he said that he's the only way, I guess he's the only way. This is just one, because I told you 10 minutes, so I have to end soon. This is just one example of like how prophecy fulfilled. It's amazing, really. Sometimes you just say, it's just no big deal. When you read the Bible, it's just, because this is just two verses. And then they move on to a different topic again. Like, boom, and just move on, boom. But this, it happened. But now we travel back a day before these things. Because he was coming from Bethany. It's the next verse. He was coming from Bethany. And then he was hungry. So he was coming from Bethany. He is hungry. He went to the temple. He went ballistic. This is the time when he turned the tables. And then after he turned the table, he uttered the principle, this will be destroyed altogether. Boom, that's the sequence. I'm just going backwards. This is more fun that way. It looks complicated. So Jesus, like, he was hungry. And then verse 13, he noticed a fig tree in full leaf, little way off, so he went over to see if he could find any figs. But there were only leaves because it was too early in the season. Then Jesus said to the tree, "May no one ever eat from you again." And the disciples heard him say it. The next morning, as they passed, the fig tree that he had cursed, the disciples noticed that it had been withered from the roots up. Now, I struggled for a bit about this one. Because what's that mean? Well, you go, you're hungry, you notice everywhere else that they're just forming leaf buds, and there was this tree. Can you not look and say, "Oh, there's no fruit"? I struggle about that. Like, wow, what does that mean? Because I look at it. So we remember the theme. This is the cleansing of the temple, from Bethany to cleansing of the temple. This is still related. That not everybody who goes to church, who read the Bibles, who seems to know more about the Bible, are saved. They can have more knowledge than us. They can read the Bible. They can tell you say something, and they can tell you exactly where is that in the Bible. But again, it doesn't mean that they're saved, because just like this tree, it has the appearance of. I'm talking to Christians now, because this might hurt you a bit, but I mean, that's why we're family, right? You can be attending the church all the time, but if you have not accepted Christ in your heart, forget it. You're just wasting time. Might as well watch football on Sunday morning. Get more productive that way. This is what I came up with. This, my personal application to me that I'm sharing with you is, yeah, you can have all the appearance that you're great. I mean, you can only fake your Christianity for so long. And then when Christ came, what if you're not saved? Then what do? You're who? Or you drive your car, got into an accident. I hope not. I'll pray for that. That's not going to happen. And you're not sure you're saved. This is the personal application to me. So My challenge is, this is our instruction book. Read it. If you don't want to read it for its the spiritual content because, oh, that's too religious, then read it for moral content. Then read it for its guidance. Read it for its principles. And again, if you're not sure, call our deacons. Call anybody in church. And we'll tell you how to get saved, just to make sure. Because could you imagine you attending this church for 30 years, and then later you found out that you're not saved? That's a travesty, because what's the point? And that's what we're trying, from the leadership, this is what we're trying to do. I mean, they can put up a show or something like that, but the objective here is all of us will go to heaven someday. And the only way is Christ. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. All have sinned and come short for the glory of God, for the wages of sin is death. Right? That's it. This is the personal application principle for this tree, that you can only fake your Christianity for so long. One day you will be revealed. I hope you prepare it for that time. And with that, I'll call the worship team.